Welcome to Sentinel Watch, where we look at life through a spiritual lens. I'm Jenny Sawyer. What's one of the best ways to wrap up the year? Well, we think it's got to be thinking about prayer and how to pray more effectively. So we're revisiting this wonderful podcast from our archives. Let's listen. Welcome to Sentinel Watch. I'm Jenny Sawyer. Today, we're going to explore the topic of prayer. Recently, one of my colleagues, David Brown, interviewed Bob Cochran. At one point, Bob talked about how he'd been praying every day for multiple hours. Well, more than a few of our listeners wrote to us because they wanted to know more about that. Some of them said things like, "I have trouble praying even for 5 minutes. How does Bob manage 2 to 3 hours?" So we asked Bob if he'd be willing to share what he's learned about prayer, and I'm happy to say he's with me here today to tell you all about it. So, Bob, you mentioned in that last show that you were spending 2 to 3 hours in prayer and doing prayerful study each day, and you really missed that time when you hadn't been able to fit it into your day. So let's talk about the question everyone wants answered. How do you pray for that long?
Well, I'll certainly try to answer that, but let me start by turning that question back briefly. There are quite a list of activities that we engage in all the time for 2 or 3 hours at a time without any sense of burden. Watching a movie, going to a concert, playing a round of golf, having lunch with friends, going to a party, working on a hobby. I mean, there, it goes on and on. And I'm not entirely sure why we think sometimes, and I do too, that prayer is different, that prayer somehow is difficult. Prayer is tough. You know, we can do these other things without even thinking about it. But somebody says, "We're going to pray for the next 2 hours," we get all frazzled about it. And I don't know why that would be, because prayer should be something that we enjoy doing just at least as much as we enjoy doing some of these other things.
Maybe to get started, it would be helpful to just build a foundation for our listeners of when we talk about prayer, what exactly are we talking about?
I think there's a lot of different definitions of prayer. A great way to think about it, at least it helps me a lot, is what Jesus said: "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." And when we talk about that, we tend to emphasize the word truth. We're going to know the truth, which is natural. But I think it's just as important to emphasize, know the truth. We have to know the truth. Not think about the truth or talk about the truth or feel comforted by the truth or discuss the truth, but know it. Really, truly know it. And when you know something, you have no doubts, no tentativeness, no hesitation. You know it. And if we get to that point, we will certainly have results in our prayers. So I think the ultimate point or goal, purpose of prayer is to know the truth, to get to the point where your thought is thoroughly convinced of the truth. And to me, anything that points you in that direction is prayer. It can be thinking about and working with and letting your thought dwell on things that already exist, like the Lord's Prayer or the daily prayer or the scientific statement of being. It can be words of your own that you think of as you try to apply truths that you know to the situation you're dealing with. It can be study. It can be thoughtful study. We can study the lesson sermon, which is citations from the Bible and Science and Health contained in the Christian Science Quarterly, which comes out every week. We can study the textbook itself, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy. Not just reading, but thinking about what you're reading and how it applies to you and whether or not you're holding up your end of the deal in terms of what we're supposed to be doing in our lives. It can be talking with God and sharing your thoughts, your feelings, even your fears with God. And it can be not talking at all. It can be listening and just letting the answers come to you in stillness. It could be expressions of gratitude. I think I could go on. Anything that moves us toward knowing the truth is prayer. And there's no rigid definition, certainly no one definition, and all those things work together. And when we get ourselves into that feeling, that flow of doing those things, the time goes by pretty quickly. It doesn't feel like we're laboring. It feels like we're exploring. I think that's one thing about prayer. I think at its best is not just going over familiar things that we know, but we should feel like we're going into new territory to some extent, where we're exploring new things, getting to places we hadn't quite been before, either ideas we haven't thought of or just a deeper understanding, a deeper sense of familiar ideas. Anything that moves us toward that feeling of knowing the truth is prayer.
Yeah, that really gives us a nice sense of kind of the spectrum of types of prayer. And I appreciate hearing that it doesn't just look one way. And in fact, as you're praying, it may shift and change into a lot of different forms as you spend that time endeavoring to feel closer to God. Yeah. Let's get into a little bit more about this whole idea of truth for a second, because I think today there can be a feeling that, well, we define our own truth. You know, I'm sure you've certainly heard that expression, speaking my truth.
Yes.
So when the Bible is talking about truth, what is your sense of what truth is there?
Well, I think truth does shift humanly. There are different points of view. It's very difficult to pin down what the human truth is about a given situation. Even the basic facts can be in dispute, and the interpretation of those facts is constantly in dispute, it seems like. But the truth that the Bible speaks really begins begins and ends with God. God is omnipotent, and God is good, and therefore good is omnipotent, ever-present. Anything which is not good is not true. So truth is good. And good is, I think we all have an instinctive feeling for what's good in terms of, say, love is good, courage, honesty, integrity, creativity, beauty, satisfaction, sense of peace, a sense of companionship, affection, patience, those kinds of things. Whatever our political or cultural views might be, I don't think there's anybody that would say those things aren't good. And that's what is real. And that's what we are looking to establish in our thought as we, quote, know the truth.
Right. So it sounds like you're saying that truth goes beyond any particular opinions about things that we might have, and, you know, even beyond what the five physical senses can perceive, because truth is really about the truth of being, what's actually spiritually real. And we can know and feel what that truth is because God is truth. And truth, that's truth with a capital T, meaning God, shows us what's true.
I had an experience once I'd like to share with you if I can.
Yeah, go for it.
It's kind of embarrassing, but we're among friends here, so I'll go ahead. This happened to me quite a few years ago. I was in college, and there were no cell phones then. But we had a landline, and the central switchboard would put call through when you got one. So one night I was studying, and I got a call, picked it up, and I said, hello. And the voice said, Bob. And I said, yeah. And he said, this is your Uncle George. And I said, hi, Uncle George. He said, hi, how are you? And I said, fine. He said, how's school? And I said, going along very well. He said, how was your trip to England? And I said, oh, it was great, best thing I ever did. He said, well, that's terrific. Aunt Mary and I are in the area. We didn't want to be this close without at least reaching out and touching base. And I said, yeah, of course not. So all this is pretty ordinary, except for one thing. I did not actually have an Uncle George.
Did you know that at the time or no?
Yeah, yes, I did know that. the whole time this conversation was going on, I'm thinking to myself, who is this guy? How can I not know Uncle George? He knows me. He knows I go to school here. He knows I went to England. He's very fond of me. I don't understand what's going on here. And who's Aunt Mary? So we chatted away for a couple of minutes, and he finally said something that was just didn't make sense in terms of my life. And I said, well, wait a minute. We went back and forth. And of course, it was a mistake. There was another Bob Cochran in the college dorm complex, which was pretty large. We didn't know about each other even. And the switchboard had put him through to the wrong one.
Oh, wow.
So we said goodbye. It was kind of embarrassing, especially for me, because at least he had a nephew named Bob. I didn't even have an Uncle George, so I don't know what he thought. But anyway, when I look back on this, I'm struck by how readily the human mind accepts suggestions, even when it knows they're not true. Now, I knew I didn't have an Uncle George. Never spoken with him, never met him, never heard him talked about by my parents. No way did I have an Uncle George. But this guy was so sure of himself, and he was so just straightforward and matter-of-fact about it, and it happened so quickly that I found myself thinking frantically, maybe I do have an Uncle George. How can I have forgotten about him?
Hmm.
Which was crazy. Well, I think, I should speak for myself, I think as a Christian Scientist sometimes, I do the same thing. I know that Christian Science heals. I've had healings, and I've seen healings, and I've heard or read about, by this time in my life, thousands of healings, some of them amazing. So I know that Christian Science heals. But when something happens, all too often, I find myself thinking, oh, why did this happen? I wonder what caused it. I hope it's not serious. How long is this going to go on? What if I can't heal it?
Mm.
Just chatting away with Uncle George instead of putting a stop to those things right away. Now, I should have said, when Uncle George said, I'm your Uncle George, I should have said, I don't have an Uncle George. There's been a mistake. Mm. And that would have saved us both a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
You know, but I didn't. And when you know something, you can't be jarred out of it. You can't be taken by surprise. You can't be made to doubt. You don't doubt your own name. You don't doubt that 2 + 2 = 4. There are things in life we don't doubt. And if we can get to that place in our thought that we don't doubt the truth that God, divine love, divine mind, is good and in control, if we can know that, that's effective prayer.
Hmm. Thank you for sharing that story. That's hilarious. And I think it is such a great metaphor for how we all have conversations with that voice that's arguing for something that on some level we know isn't true. Maybe we don't feel entirely convinced of it, but on some level, because of what we've read in the Bible or studied in Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy, or learned in Christian Science Sunday School, you know, there's something about whatever's coming to us via the 5 physical senses that we're like, hmm.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I'm going to remember that from now on. That's great. So what about somebody who says, well, I really want to know the truth, and I do when things are going well, but when I get scared or when I feel pain or when the images in front of me are, you know, a fire or a flood or a hurricane, I have a really hard time sticking with it because that seems so real.
Well, welcome to the club, I would say to that person. I think we all have those reactions to things, but I would say a couple of things about that. We tend, at least I tend, to go along sort of, I'm aware of the truth and so forth, but I'm living my life and I'm focused on the details of what's happening. And then something happens and suddenly I feel like I have to switch gears. Oh my gosh, now I really have to pray or I really have to get on this. And the more we can keep our thought in that place, in that knowing place, the less we're impressed when something happens. Our immediate reaction will be to say, this can't be real. I don't have an Uncle George. That'll be the first thing we say, as opposed to, I wonder who this guy is or whatever. So we have to keep ourselves in that place as much as we can. The other thing, which I think is really helpful, is to realize that we're not personally responsible for creating or generating inspiration, the needed truths that heal. In other words, we tend to think of ourselves sometimes, God's over there, he's perfect. I'm over here living this kind of imperfect life. Oh my God, something happened. Now I've got to use my human mind and my human wisdom and my human willpower and good intentions to sort of nudge myself over and prod myself over to where God is and then fix this thing. And that's not the best way to think about it, I think. We always have to start with the idea that we are at one with God. And that means that the inspiration that we need, it also has its source in God. We don't have to create it. We don't have to think of it. We don't have to, you know, generate it. It's part of us. And that can give a great sense of peace and confidence when we're dealing with an issue, because ultimately we don't heal. It's the truth that heals. And in fact, the healing itself is a revealing of what already is. Healing is revealing. Nothing real changes, because everything real has already been made by God. It's complete. Creation is complete. So nothing real has to change. We just have to see it. And to realize that perfection is already there and the ability to see it is already part of us, to me, is helpful. It helps quiet fear.
I'm so glad you made that point, Bob, because I think that inherent in that feeling of I don't know how to know the truth, I can't know the truth,
right,
is this sense that we alone are doing the knowing. It is personal effort, humanly generated, and therefore arduous and challenging. But I love that you are reorienting the conversation toward what's actually going on. And I'd love to just delve a little bit more deeply into this with you. From a Christian Science perspective, can you talk a little bit more about that relationship between God and us? What does that look like? And so when we are, quote, quote, knowing something, what's actually happening?
I'd love to talk about a healing I had that might address that.
That'd be great.
Because it's exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Not too long ago, I had all the symptoms of a urinary tract infection. I know what the symptoms are, and I've encountered them before. So I started praying about it and didn't get too far. Called a Christian Science practitioner for help. Improvement at first, and then it started to go downhill again. And then it got very inconvenient and painful. And I was very, very discouraged. So I emailed the practitioner one night and said, well, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm freaking out, whatever. And he wrote back a very calm email, said, take a look at, I think it was Malachi 3:6. For I am the Lord, I change not. Therefore, ye sons of Jacob are not consumed. And I just thought, what does this have to do with anything? But the more I thought about it, I don't know what the practitioner meant, but the more I looked at that, I thought, I'm consumed right now with this problem. It is consuming my thought. It's all I'm thinking about for the last 2 or 3 days. The disappointment, the discouragement, the anxiety, I was consumed by it. And I thought, you know, I can do something about that. I'm going to forget about the physical part of it. And I'm going to stop being consumed by these negative, these anxious, disappointed, confused thoughts. I've prayed. The practitioner's prayed. God is here, whether anybody's praying or not. I'm going to just silence my thought and trust the truth. I'm going to let the truth work, or let the truth be what it is. And I just felt myself let go of everything. And the first changes in your thought, the anxiety drained away. Stop thinking about how long is this going to take and all that stuff. It was all gone. And then I could feel changes physically start to happen. And within about less than an hour, it was simply gone. The problem was over. So there's no magic way to get to that point. But the point that we want to get to, again, is to know that God is present, that God is the only power, that we are at one with him, that the work is not just being done. It's been done. It's done. We're complete already. And to let that be part of our thought is what heals. And I will also say, therefore, it's what reveals what is already true. And sometimes it seems to take time sometimes, and we have to be vehement about it sometimes, and other times we just have to let go and let truth take over our thoughts. There's no one approach.
Mm. That's such a great healing, Bob. Thank you so much for sharing. And it's encouraging because I think that there's an inclination to try to solve problems. You know, I mean, I think from the time we're in preschool, it's like we are taught to be little problem solvers. And that's not a bad thing. But then if you don't solve the problem, what's your response? Well, you just work and work and work and work and work and work and work until the problem is solved. But you're indicating, at least what I'm hearing, is that praying about something, listening to God, yielding to God, it's coming at it from a very different standpoint.
It sure is. I remember when I was a kid, I don't know how old I was, 12 or 13 years old, it occurred to me, I mean, I'd heard it before, but it finally sank in that, gee, God is really the source. God is the one who does things. We express him. We do them as his image and likeness. But he's the source. He's really the one who does things. And, you know, I instantly had this thought. I remember, I want to be the one who does things.
Why?
I want to be the guy. I want to be the guy that scores the touchdowns. I want to be the guy, whatever, you know. And that's the human mind wants to be God, basically. That's what the whole thing in the Adam and Eve story is about. I want to eat the apple, and I'll know good and evil, and I'll be God.
Wants to be in control until it can't be in control anymore.
Exactly. So what we end up doing is, of course, insisting on being control and being the doer until we really get to something that we can't do.
Mm-hmm.
And then we either just collapse or hopefully turn to God and recognize he's always been and always will be the doer, not us. And, you know, once you understand that, why would you ever want it to be any other way?
Mm.
Because God is infinite mind. And however smart you think you are, or good you think you are at solving problems, or how creative you think you are, or anything you think you are, you're not infinite mind. But as his reflection, you have infinite intelligence. You have access to an infinite intelligence. No problem that can't be solved. Once you let go of that human ego that wants to be the one who solves it.
Well, what I really like about this is it's taking prayer from a struggle fest, you know,
right,
into something that's actually joyful. And you used the word an exploration earlier. And I think that, to me, in my best moments of prayer, that's exactly what prayer feels like. It is the coolest thing to just feel like you're seeing the universe in a completely different way from God's perspective.
Yes.
I wonder if you might be able to share for somebody who says, well, I don't know how to just explore in prayer. What does that look like? Could you give us some little handholds?
Well, I think we didn't talk about this at all, but another way to look at prayer, another definition of it is simply desire.
Mm.
Mrs. Eddy said, desire is prayer, the first page of Science and Health. So what we desire is what we're praying for. We may use different words. We may think we're praying for something else, but what we desire is what we're really praying for. So what I'm saying in answer to your question is, if we desire to find the true path, we will, because, again, it is God that does the work. It's God that opens the way.
Mm.
So in everyone, there's at least a little spark that desires to find the true path. And that desire will be rewarded. But it's like a little tiny, in all of us at some point or another, it's like a little flame that has to be nurtured, and we have to cherish it and express it and want that to come to fruition. I think sometimes we pray and we're afraid it's not going to work, and I think sometimes people pray and they're afraid it is going to work. Because because now they're going to really have to change their lives.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're really going to have to come to terms with some things you may not have wanted to come to terms with. So there's always that resistance to prayer from both sides, because you do have to give up your human self for a much greater sense of identity. So if that's your desire, it will be rewarded. You will find a path. But you have to start by admitting to yourself that that's what you want.
Mm.
I do want to do that. I want to find the truth. I've read a lot of articles and testimonies in the periodicals by people who never heard of Christian Science when they started out, but had a very deep desire to find the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And that desire eventually led them to Christian Science. The desire was the key, that honest, sincere desire. So that has to be nurtured and cherished and admitted, and a certain amount of humility and, you know, denial of the human self has to take place before we can make that first step, I think.
That's such a great point. And, you know, I had recently been thinking about that desire as prayer line myself. And it occurred to me as I was thinking about it that, you know, Science and Health's full title is Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. And it just really connected for me for the first time that in Psalms, the psalmist says quite a few times, you know, help me, O Lord, help me. And I think that sometimes we don't think of that as like a particularly, I don't know, like advanced or robust prayer.
Right.
But that right. does help me, I think, is a desire. You know, it is a desire to see something more of God, to feel more of God's presence. And, you know, over and over again in the Psalms, we see how that request, that petition, help me, changes often by the end of the Psalm to this feeling of gratitude for God's goodness. And so to me, that's just a reminder that that desire really is answered. And it just comes in such an individual way for each of us. You know, I think one of the hard things sometimes when we're looking to find a model for prayer is that there kind of is no model because it is so individual for each of us.
Yes.
And it's great because the Bible and Science and Health give us these tools and, you know, the word I used before, these handholds in terms of things that we can kind of get started with, which is great. But then I think at a certain point, it's like it gets out of this kind of human mind mechanism or process and just kind of takes flight. And that's not something that you can really map out for anybody else.
No, I think that's right. I love the examples you use from the Psalms because help me has one fantastic aspect to it, which is simply humility.
Mm-hmm.
It's acknowledging that your sense of being a person is not enough. You need more than that. And that's huge. That's a huge step.
Well, Mrs. Eddy calls it the genius of Christian Science, which I think pretty much says it all.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Bob, you'd mentioned this word resistance, and I want to circle back to that because I don't think this conversation would be complete without addressing the fact that at various times we all feel resistance to praying, resistance to getting still, and, you know, just sitting down even for 10 minutes and
yes.
quieting our thoughts and listening to God. I mean, it's funny how even when we've experienced the benefits of that, we can still feel this feeling of either I don't have time or, you know, I'm in the middle of something else or, you know, this can wait.
No, absolutely.
Can you talk a little bit more about how can we deal with that resistance?
That's a great question. It appears to me and to all of us, I think, that there is so much resistance to not just Christian Science, but sometimes any religion, any sense of spirituality at all in the world. And if we're not careful, we take that in. But the only thing that can ever affect us is what's in our own thoughts. So whatever seems to be resistance is only in our own thought. It's not anywhere else.
Mm.
And therefore, it has to be met on our own thought. And I think it has to be met in the same way that we meet anything, which not a bad place to start would be that sense of desire. I desire not to feel this sense of resistance.
Mm.
It's my desire not to feel it. I'm not going to engage with it. I'm not going to have a conversation with it. I'm not going to go down the Uncle George route. I'm not going to engage. I desire to see through this resistance as something that has no power. And in fact, nothing is stopping us in those situations from simply at least, say, opening the Bible or opening Science and Health and reading a verse or just reciting something that we love, the 23rd Psalm, whatever it might be, to break that sense of resistance, that sense of being frozen mentally, because nothing is doing it to us. It's all in thought. And we do have control of our thought. And we can always take the first step, and then another idea and another thought, and break that dam, break that log jam until, as you say earlier, it takes flight, and then you're through it. But to think of it as something that's real, that's something that's a force, something that's formidable, something you have to fight against, as opposed, it's more like the room is dark. You can't fight the darkness.
Mm.
You can only turn on the light. So you have to start by turning on the light. And if it's just a tiny bit of light, it's still light. It still pierces some of the darkness. And you just keep turning that light up until the darkness no longer is even there. Because there was never any darkness there, because darkness isn't anything.
Mm.
So if you could turn the light on and keep turning it on, that's, I think, the key. But not to think that it's a power out there. Nothing is really stopping us from doing what we need to do. And we've all faced that. I mean, I've sat down to pray, and within, I don't know, minutes, I'm thinking about something else. And it's like, it's really frustrating. But you just have to realize, no, I can keep at it. I can take the next step. I can take the next step. I can keep turning the light up. And eventually, it does take flight.
Yeah, and you know, one thing that occurs to me as you're saying this, Bob, is that resistance can sometimes come in really subtle forms. And I think one of those forms might even be that thought that, well, I just don't know how to pray, you know? And
right.
In various ways, that has probably come to all of us. Maybe it's like, we feel pretty confident about praying about certain things, but, oh, like a big world issue, oh, I don't really know how to pray about that. But I think just being able to identify that for what that is also helps us begin to deal with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I wonder if you have an example of a time when prayer took you to an unexpected place, or something surprising came out of your prayers. One thing that strikes me based on what you're talking about is that maybe the unexpected thing sometimes in prayer for all of us is how our prayers shift away from a particular outcome to just really being more interested in knowing what God is. And that maybe that seems like super abstract, but
no, I think that's exactly right. I think that's absolutely right. When I was playing football in high school, I wasn't very good when I started out. Worked very hard to get good, and I prayed all the time about where the qualities come from and all that. But it didn't seem to, I got better, but it didn't seem to make an impression on the coaches. And when my senior year was my last chance to really do anything, and I was just felt like I was facing a wall, because I thought, I seem to be playing pretty well, but the coaches have, you know, several years of thinking of me as a scrub, and they're not really appreciating me, and what am I going to do, blah, blah, blah. And I was praying about this one day, and this thought came to me, maybe God doesn't want you to play football.
Hmm.
And it was shocking, because in all the years I'd been working and praying, that had never crossed my mind. It was always about how God was going to help me do what I wanted to do. I never thought to myself, maybe that's not the right thing to be doing. And when it finally sank in that moment, I felt such a feeling of relief. I wasn't disappointed. I was relieved. I don't have to do this to be God's child. He'll have other things for me. And what a great feeling that was. It was an absolute freeing feeling. And like what you said a minute ago, I just cared about the fact that I was entering a new phase of my identity, really. That had nothing to do with football. It was exciting. It all happened in a space of a minute.
Mm.
So I walked into the locker room to quit. And I was glad to be doing it. And at that moment, the coach moved me up.
Did you stick around?
I did, yeah. I played that year because I figured, well, I think the point here wasn't that football was a bad thing, but that my worship of it, my obsession with it, was the bad thing.
Mm.
And so I ended up playing, and I actually started for most of the year and had a great time and all that. But only after I let go of it, I really let go of it.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, when I went in to quit, this is not important, but it's kind of amusing. The coach's door was closed, and I knocked on it. And no one came. I could hear them in there talking to each other, but nobody came to the door. And I kept knocking. Nobody came to the door. So I didn't know what to do. Other players were coming in. I was kind of embarrassed. So I thought, well, I'll put my uniform on and go out one last time. And then I'll quit afterwards. And it was during that practice that he moved me up. So I tried to quit, and I wasn't allowed to quit.
Well, so that's interesting then. So it really wasn't about God, quote, quote, wanting you or not wanting you to play football. I mean, in a way, that was just, that thought was just kind of a vehicle to move you off of that, I don't want to say obsession exactly, but, you know, intense focus.
No, obsession is exactly the right word.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think, in fact, you know, I don't literally think God knows about football one way or the other. But
football fans will be sad to hear that.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, that thought was just a way of saying, yeah, get over this. It's not important in the larger scheme of things. And that was true. But there's still, on the other hand, there's nothing wrong with playing football. And so that was okay. But only when I wasn't obsessed with it anymore, only when it didn't, honestly, it was interfering with my spiritual growth.
Mm.
I didn't think of it that way at the time, but looking back on it, because my whole thing with Christian Science was it's going to make me a better football player. Well, that's not really the way to think about Christian Science or any religion for that matter.
Yeah. Bob, thank you so much for being here today. It's just been an absolute delight to talk with you.
Well, thank you. I've really enjoyed it.
I've been speaking with Bob Cochran. He's from Ashburn, Virginia. And please join me again next week when I'll be speaking with another recent guest, Deborah Packer. As Bob indicated, there are lots of ways to pray, so we're bringing Deborah back to see what she has to share on the subject. You won't want to miss it. Thanks for listening to Sentinel Watch, a weekly production of the Christian Science Sentinel. I'm Jenny Sawyer.
This podcast is produced and copyrighted by the Christian Science Publishing Society.